He lurched out of his apartment into the corridors that honeycombed Cellini, bleary-eyed, unshaven, still in the clothes he had slept in for the past 2 nights. He shambled along the nearly empty corridors, heading for Diane's quarters.
Sleeping alone in his giant bed, Humphreys was awakened by the buzz of his private phone. Grumbling, he sat up and told the computer to put his caller on screen. The wall screen showed Grigor's somber, lean face.
"He's left the apartment," Grigor said without preamble.
Humphreys nodded and cut the connection. Wide awake now, he bunched the pillows behind him and sat back comfortably, then commanded the computer to show the display from the Pico cameras built into Diane Fervoret's apartment. She had searched her quarters several times, seeking bugs, Humphreys knew, but no one had found the microscopic cameras built into the apartment's wiring. 4 dark pictures corded Humphreys' bedroom wall screen. 1 view of each room in Diane's apartment. Sitting room, bedroom, kitchen, lavatory. He switched to infrared mode and saw that she was lying asleep in her bed. For 2 days, she had searched Cellini for Harbin and not found him. Humphreys had secreted the mercenary far from her prying eyes, and fed the man with drugs that heightened his normal sense of betrayal, elevated his anger to homicidal fury. Years earlier, chemists had developed hallucinogenic PCPs such as angel dust out of the primitive natural amphetamines. What Humphreys's people were feeding Harbin was far more sophisticated, fine-tuned to turn him into a raging maniac. Now Humphreys sat back in his bed and waited for the conclusion of this little drama that Diane Fervoret had brought upon herself. "Try to force me to knuckle under to you, will you? Blackmail me? Threaten me? Well, now you'll get what you deserve, you little slut."
Harbin found her door at last. He hesitated a moment, head swimming, fist poised to rap on the door. And give her a chance to call for help? Give her a chance to hide her latest lover? He forced the lock on the sliding door easily and stepped inside her shadowy living room. It took a few moments for his eyes to adjust to the darkness. Then he padded silently to her bedroom door. Something smelled rank, foul, and he realized it was his own body odor. "She's done this to me," he told himself. "She's made me into a pig." "Like Circe," he thought, peering into the shadows to make out her sleeping form on the bed. "The enchantress who turns men into swine." She was alone, he saw. He moved to the night table and switched on the lamp. Diane awoke slowly, blinked up at him, then smiled. "Doric, where have you been? I've looked everywhere for you." Then she saw the murderous look on his unshaved face. She sat up and let the covers slip to her waist. "What's the matter? What's wrong? You look terrible." He stared down at her. How many times had he caressed those breasts? How many other men had shared her body? "Doric, what's happened?" His voice, when he found it, was little more than a croak. "Are you pregnant?" The shock on her face was all the answer he needed.
"I was going to tell you..."
"With Humphrey's baby?"
"Yes, but..."
She got no farther. He seized her by the throat and pulled her off the bed, squeezing hard with both hands. She flailed her arms pitifully as he throttled her. Her eyes glazed. Her tongue bulged out of her gagging mouth. Still crushing her larynx with one hand, Harbin grabbed her protruding tongue with the other, dug his nails into it, and pulled it out of her lying mouth. Her shriek of pain drowned in the blood gushing from her mouth. Harbin relaxed his grip on her throat just enough to let her strangle on her own blood, gurgling, moaning, her hands sliding down his arms until her arms hung limp and dead.
Watching from his bed, Humphreys felt his guts churn and heave. He lurched to his feet and staggered to the lavatory, Diane's last bubbling moans lost in his own retching agony. By the time he had wiped his face and stumbled back into his bedroom, the wall screen showed Harbin on his knees, sobbing inconsolably, Diane lying on the floor beside him, her face spattered with blood, her eyes staring sightlessly. "He ripped her tongue out," Humphreys said to himself, gagging again. "My God, he's a monster." Crawling back into bed, he switched off the camera view and called Grigor, who was waiting patiently in his office. "Diane Fervords had a heart attack," Humphreys said to his security chief, struggling to keep his voice even. "A fatal one. Get a reliable crew to her apartment to clean the place up and take care of the body." Grigor nodded once.
"And Harbin?"
"Get him tranquilized and tucked away in a safe place. Better bring a team. He won't trank easily."
"Wouldn't it be better to silence him?"
Humphreys laughed bitterly. "With this hanging over him? He's silenced, believe it. And he's still available to do whatever I need him to do."
"Still?"
"I'll find plenty of work for him, don't worry," Humphreys said. "Just keep him away from me. I don't want him in the same room with me ever again." He thought a moment, then added, "I don't want him on the same planet with me."
Lars Fuchs looked up in surprise when he heard the knock at his door. He shut down the drama he'd been watching, Sophocles' Antigone, and called out, "Come in." It was George again, looking grim. Fuchs rose from his chair. "To what do I owe this honor?" "Time to go," George said. Even though he knew this moment was inevitable, Fuchs felt startled. His insides went hollow. "Now?" "Now," said George. There were two armed men outside his door, both strangers to Fuchs. He walked stolidly beside George up the dusty tunnel, trying to suppress the irritation that rasped in his lungs and throat. He couldn't do it, and broke into a racking cough. "Should have brought masks," George mumbled.
"Oh, what difference does it make?"
Fuchs asked as he tried to bring his coughing under control. George hacked a bit, too, as they walked along the tunnel. Fuchs realized they were headed upward, toward the airlock that opened onto the surface.
"Maybe that's how they'll execute me," he thought. "Toss me outside without a suit."
But they stopped short of the airlock. George ushered Fuchs into a sizable chamber while the two armed guards stayed out in the dust. Fuchs saw that his former crew were all there. They all turned toward him.
"Norden, Sanja, you're all right, all of you?"
The six of them nodded and even smiled. Norden said, "We are quite all right, Captain, sir." "They're leaving," George said. "Your ship's been refitted and fueled up. They're heading out into the belt."
"Good," Fuchs said. "I'm glad."
"And you're going with them,"
George added, his shaggy face deeply creased with a worried frown.
"Me? What do you mean?"
George took a heavy breath, then explained,
"We're not going to execute you, Lars. You're being exiled. For life. Get out. Don't come back. Ever."
"Exiled? I don't understand."
"We talked it over, me and the council. We decided to exile you. That's it."
"Exile?" Fuchs repeated, stunned, unable to believe it.
"That's right. Some people won't like it. But that's what we fucking decided."
"You're saving my life, George."
"If you call flitting out in the belt like a bloody flying Dutchman saving your life, then, yeah, that's what we're doing. Just don't ever try to come back here, that's all."
For weeks, Fuchs had been preparing himself mentally to be executed. He realized now that his preparations had been nothing short of a pitiful sham. An enormous wave of gratitude engulfed him. His knees felt watery, his eyes misted over.
"George, what can I say?"
"Say goodbye, Lars."
"Goodbye, then. And thank you."
George looked decidedly unhappy, like a man who had been forced to make a choice between hideous alternatives. Fuchs went with his crew to the airlock, suited up, and climbed into the shuttlecraft that was waiting to take them to Nautilus, hanging in orbit above Ceres. Half an hour later, as he sat in the command chair on Nautilus's bridge, Fuchs sent a final message to Big George.
"Finish the habitat, George. Build a decent home for yourselves."
"We will,"
George answered, his red bearded face already small and distant in the ship's display screen.
"You just keep yourself out of trouble, Lars. Be a good rock rat. Stay inside the lines."
It was only then that Fuchs began to understand what exile meant.
It was the biggest social event in the history of Selene. Nearly 200 wedding guests assembled in the garden outside Humphreys's mansion. Pancho Lane